Saddle up your horses. Well, hello and welcome everyone to Red Sky Radio and the Robin Walters Show, brought to you here on the Red Sky Radio Network. God bless you. Thank you for tuning in today. Packed program as always. I'm going to start with a little bit of good news, but first of all, if you want to reach me, you may, certainly at redskyradio777@gmail.com. redskyradio777@gmail.com. I just want to start out, first of all, this has been a conflicting week. There has been so many things that Donald Trump has done well, and he's got a bunch of things he's doing poorly. He's the best we have. He's all that we have. And I just want to see his personality get out of the way of good policy and quit going after people who do nothing. Other than just antagonize him, and that seems to get to him. I don't know why he feels that he needs to do that. It's distracting. And I have to tell you, I have to pick up, this is where I am faulting. I have to pick up my prayer support for him. I don't want to fall into that Ronald Reagan trap where, well, we got Ronnie, we got elected, he's on his own now, we got him in there, and of course he made some unwise, good president, and a great, not quite great, close to great maybe, but he made some bad appointments. We ended up with a continuation of Roe v. Wade because of him, actually, appointing Sandra Day O'Connor and a few other things. Most of all, though, he had the heart of America. And he was a lover of America, much like Donald Trump is. But just because one loves a country doesn't mean that you are also then, by definition, full of wisdom. That's not always the case. There's a few things I want to point out. Not that the things that he's doing well, we know the things he's doing well, but the things that I want people to think in terms of what is best for this country, regardless of what he's saying or doing, and there are a few things that are not, I don't think, a good idea. The $2,000 rebate per person is, I think, a terrible idea. I have a sense that Trump is trying to buy some, just buy more accolades. He seems to be in need of them all the time to confirm his place in history. It's somewhat bothersome, but first of all, it's unjust. The fact that, all right, if you make under $100,000, those are the people who are going to get the rebate. Well, who pays most of the taxes? Can we just kind of go back to that matter of equity? Who pays most of the taxes? People who make over $100,000. All the people who don't pay any taxes are, by definition, under $100,000. Are those the ones that should get it, that don't actually contribute to the system? I don't think so. You know, there are multiple biblical references. I didn't prepare for this. It just hit me that you are not to treat the rich and the poor differently. There is no favor that should be given to the rich because they are rich. But there's also no favor that should be given to the poor because they are poor when you are in a matter of law or a situation where it comes down to taxes. Actually, there was a tax, the head tax. Everybody paid the same tax in Israel, whether you had virtually nothing or you had a lot. Because there are some things for which we need to pay because we all need and will benefit from those things. And if you don't have any skin in the game, then you're going to simply always vote for and support whatever sticks it to the other guy. This is a bad idea. Next, of all, I think that, all right, so he's going to pay it with tariff money. We just had the fastest increase of national debt, fastest $1 trillion increase in national debt in the history of the United States. It just popped from 37 to 38 just like that. Where does this money come from? They say, well, it comes from tariffs. No, it doesn't. Tariffs are helping economically, but that doesn't come from tariffs. All this does is push the national debt. Multiply $2,000 times 50 or 100 million or how many ever people would get this. You're just going to see that horrifically add to the national debt at a time where we should be lean. If we're going to be lean in the government, we should be lean in the population. We've spent our way into oblivion. We've saddled our children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren with insurmountable debt from which the United States can never recover. And I will say this, will never recover without a cataclysmic economic event likely leading to the end of this country, if it doesn't end before that by way of civil war. Next mistake, all these pardons. All right, I understand a grave injustice as was perpetrated dealing with the J6 so-called kangaroo court convictions. They never should have been convicted. Never. And for those kinds of convictions, they should be released pronto, immediately, post-haste. Because they never should have been there. But the use of pardons on a broader scale is inappropriate here and ill-timed. If a person has served meritoriously, if you can say that, for a long time in prison, and maybe there's a case for commuting the sentence or pardoning them in some fashion, I can see that. However, that's a totally different situation than those who should never have been convicted to begin with. And what I'm pointing to is the absolutely horrific, I can't even underscore this strongly enough, the horrific precedent this sets. And I'll tell you, this is the way it will play out. As much as I'm certain that the deficit will sink us if war doesn't sink us before that, one of the two will, and one frequently leads to the other. Most wars seem to get started when the country's in an economic hellhole and can't see a way of ever digging itself out. But the pardons could be even worse, because Trump pardoned some guy who was guilty of crypto fraud. Not because he didn't do it, but just because Trump wanted to let him out, thought in the interest of justice he shouldn't be in there any longer. Those kinds of pardons have historically, culturally, only been done at the end of one's term. And Trump has just barely served. I mean, he hasn't even served one term yet. I mean, 1 year of a four-year term. No, he's just into this thing, and he's pardoning people, not ones who never committed a crime and didn't do anything wrong. Wrongly convicted, yes, pardon them right away. The J6ers and a whole bunch of others. Mark Meadows, Rudy Giuliani, I don't have any problem. In fact, he may be late with the pardons, in my opinion. But there are a bunch of others, like this crypto fraud guy and others, that did do crimes. They haven't paid for them yet, and they should be, if they're going to be pardoned, they need to be pardoned at the end of the term. Because this is what's going to happen. I'm not a betting person. On this, I will bet. On the assumption that we are reduced to having a slime bag like Gavin Newsom ruling over us, the man, the vengeful, charlatan, hypocritical, narcissistic piece of crap that he is. Oh, but Gavin, I mean that with all due respect. So he gets elected. And there are horrific crimes committed, frankly, against humanity. But to the Democrats, it's in the name of democracy. That's what the fascists, whatever somebody is calling you, that's what they are. If they're calling you a fascist, that means actually they probably are the fascists. But I'm not calling them that lest I have that same charge leveled back against me. Right? Got that? But this is what happens. You've got all these potential injustices and crimes that are committed by government employees under a Gavin Newsom administration. And as soon as there's a jury verdict, the scumbags are out. He just starts pardoning them, left and right. Screw the federal judicial system. Now, maybe you can keep them under state crimes, but not the federal crimes. This is a horrific precedent to set that will be used against godly people, conservatives in general, if they are back in office and you have crimes committed by Gavin's Gestapo, and then he just simply lets them out because Trump has set the precedent of letting out people, not at any time during, well, I'm sorry, not at the end of his term, but at any time he feels like it. It is a horrible precedent. I have not heard anybody talk about this. Either I am screwed up and way off, or this is prophetic. You'll have to decide. Number three, the whole Epstein thing. Goodness sakes, Donald, turn over the files. You can't take the Fifth Amendment, and the more you resist it, the more they're going to suspect that there's something wrong. You take the Fifth Amendment, everybody knows you're guilty. And he's trying to do that, and he said he's giving commands to the staff, no deflections. You follow my orders. You don't give in to this. It's a hoax. It's a hoax. It's a hoax. Well, you know what? Just let it come out. We'll find out whether it's a hoax or not. The Department of Justice is in Trump's hands. He's just concerned about political fallout and maybe, I don't know, his image doesn't remain untarnished till the end of his life. Okay, that's it for my Trump problems. What he does are three times as good as what I just got done telling you that he's screwing up. And for that, you know what? I applaud him. But somebody has got to be able to speak those things to him. All right. Next thing that everybody's hailing as a good thing, which I think just flat out is horrific, is the New York City exodus of people going to various red states. Okay, so you got the socialistic crap hole, Mamdani, running that city soon, once he's sworn in. New York will get the government they deserve. It's a city that wants Sharia law because we and our stupid immigration system have let anybody and everybody in, and it will finish us off. Let me just go point to something. This is a digression, but it just came to my mind. You take people that are coming from India. Do the people in India have the right to keep and bear arms? No. Do people who sneak in here from China have the right to keep and bear arms? No. How about Mexico? No. Do Mexicans have guns? Yeah, they're called the cartel. The others don't. People that are coming from maybe from Europe or whoever, do they have guns? No. So all the people that are coming into this country don't actually ever have never enjoyed the concept of a Second Amendment. And because they've never had it, they don't understand its importance. They only think in terms of, oh, maybe economic freedom. They don't talk about political freedom. They don't think that far. What are they going to do? They're going to end up voting through state legislatures to repeal the Second Amendment. Absolutely. You get enough of them that do not share the American experience, do not give a rat's rear end about American history and the fact that we're the only country in the entire world that has a Second Amendment or the equivalent thereof. It won't be any loss to them because they never had it before. There are a few exceptions. I know they coincidentally happen to be all white, but white immigrants from South Africa, because they were targeted for being white. Their guns were taken away. They have fled and have come to the United States because they can be armed and protected against gangs and the government and what have you. But that's rare. That's a rare situation where the blacks are persecuting the whites badly, sadly, and horribly, stealing their, taking their land. They call it payback, whatever you want. But the whites can't defend themselves. Actually, no one can. But the ruthless nature of the South African regime is not against other blacks. It's against whites. So I understand those few coming to the United States for gun freedom. I get it. But not others. So let's go back to this New York City exodus. They don't like Mamdani because he's going to tax the crap out of them. So they're going to South Carolina. They're going to Florida. They're going to Texas. And we, Tennessee, we have these red states rolling out the red carpet to lure people who are fleeing the prospect of socialism. But you know what? They're not fleeing the state because it's too pro-abortion. They're not fleeing the state because they're against queer marriage. And the state's big on queer marriage. They're not fleeing those states because the state loves gender mutilation. No, they're fleeing that for economic reasons. And they will bring all their crap, their political, left-wing, social crap, to all the states that are trying to lure them. This is so stinking stupid. I'm sorry. I'm just kind of livid today because I'm just kind of angry at the level of stupidity from the states like Tennessee that are doing this, South Carolina, Texas, Florida. No, keep them out. Oh, they're going to bring jobs. Yeah, and they're going to also turn those states blue because they aren't smart enough to connect the way they vote with the way that New York City turned out. I mean, I can't seem to find a reason for the United States to not be wrecked, ruined, and destroyed in the relatively near future. I mean, these policy pledges that target New Yorkers, they don't seem to be concerned about Mamdani's vision. The city governed, they said, on avowedly socialist principles. And red states are casting themselves as havens for economic freedom and common sense regulation. Bring your money, they say, here I'm quoting, bring your families, bring your skills, but just check your progressive, and I'm quoting, because I don't use that word, I would say regressive, politics at the state line. Do you think they're going to do that? No, they aren't smart enough to make the connection. If they made that connection, they would have been out of New York a long time ago. And the hypocrisy, I don't know. I probably shouldn't even spend time on this. But I guess this example of how the Democrats, the Democrats, are ridiculously hypocritical. I told a party yesterday, I said, you know, the Democrats really, I would like them, but for three reasons. They have no brains, they have no cojones, and they have no morals. After that, they're really fine people. But we've got this Minneapolis city councilman. Oh, gosh, he too sounds Muslim. Jamal Osman. He ran, just got elected, November 4th, on a campaign promoting, let's see here, restorative justice programs, which means let the criminals off and let society just eat the consequences of a person's criminal behavior. For all the low-level offenses, he wants to use alternative responses to 9/11 calls, violence prevention programs, and all this other liberal crapola that he stressed during his campaign. Well, guess what happened after November 4th? A 15 and a 16-year-old thugs threatened him with mace, stole his car, crashed it into other cars, a fire hydrant, then ran away before police capture them. So what does Jamal want? He said, I'm not a legal expert, but there has to be some kind of consequences for this action. Does he realize that everything he did are the low-level offenses he was talking about for restorative justice, for alternative responses, for violence prevention, all that liberal crap that he's espousing? And as soon as it happens to him, he immediately wants justice. What's justice? He's finally down to the root of justice. You're paying for the crime you commit. Oh, forget the economic justice, the environmental justice. All those crapola combinations and distortions of words. Justice means you're getting what you deserve for the wrong that you have done. But not for him. Good for thee, but not for me. And speaking of crooks, shysters, hypocrites, let's try Gavin Newsom. The Gavin the Gruesome, the slime bag of slime bags, who tries to blame the Indian national truck driver who made the illegal U-turn in Florida, causing three people to be killed, about a month and a half ago. He said, that's a problem with the feds. That's Donald Trump's problem. I'm glad Trump can't run a second term, because that means Gruesome can't campaign against him. And I'm at this point, I'm for Marco Rubio. I like J.D. Vance, but he's got a Trump stain. That's an identity issue that will kill him at the polls, and the people that hate Trump could just keep lobbying attacks against him. That's for another day. But the investigation here now by the U.S. Department of Transportation reveals that California has issued 17,000 commercial driver's license to dangerous foreign-born truckers. So after all these weeks of Gavin Newsom stating that California, oh, we did nothing wrong. As Sean Duffy said, quote, after those weeks of claiming they've done nothing wrong, Newsom and California have been caught red-handed. He went on to say, that now that we've exposed their lies, Duffy says 17,000 illegally issued trucking driver's license need to be revoked. They have to be revoked. He said, this is Gavin Gruesome's California. How many more lives have to die? How many more lives have to perish is it going to take for Gruesome to put the American people first? Duffy goes on to say, this is just the tip of the iceberg. My team will continue to force California to prove they have removed every illegal immigrant from behind the wheel of semi-trucks and school buses. I'm about to pull $160 million from California. As we pull more money, we've also had the option of pulling California's ability to issue commercial driver's licenses. We need to do it. And so he went on, he talked about, you know, the 28-year-old Harjinder Singh, the guy, illegal alien from India, was given the driving license, commercial driving license, the CDL, in California. He said, and this is Duffy, Sean Duffy, still talking. He said, I don't know what could be more revealing to you, but he said, I will never forget the moment. Over 1.65 million Indians, presumably, show their support to their fellow Indian because he's an Indian. But the dead American lives are meaningless. This was no mistake. Sorry, Gavin. You're scum. Those are my words. But I think I share Sean's feelings about the whole thing. He's just a little more gentlemanly than I am in that respect. So we got the Berkeley Antifa mob. Here, I want to quote Glenn Beck here. I don't quote Glenn enough. I should, from the Blaze Media. I just don't have time for all of it. He says, the students at Berkeley didn't just protest. They rejoiced in a man's death. And of course, he's speaking of Charlie Kirk. Their laughter was a warning. Our nation's soul is in danger. And silence is complicity. For outside the Turning Point USA event at the University of California, a mob gathered to protest, riot, shout down students, and mock the death of Charlie Kirk, chanting about his assassination as if it were a punchline. The world does not need more outrage, it needs more heroes, ordinary people who will stand, speak, and serve even when no one applauds. But it was not a peaceful political protest. It was cruelty on display. A glimpse of how numb parts of our culture have become to basic humanity. You can feel the shift in moments like these. When Charlie Kirk was killed, the impact of his assassin's bullet rippled through the soul of a nation. Millions felt it at once as if something beneath the surface had cracked. But out of this shock came something extraordinary. Instead of despair, there was revival. And I shared that a couple of weeks ago about the 8,000 students at the University of Tennessee that showed up for what was going to be a fairly small event. Hundreds getting baptized, giving their life to the Lord. It's fabulous. There is a remnant, and that thrills me. But Glenn goes on to say here, people who had not prayed in years began to whisper to God again. What questions rose out of grief? What is truth? What is courage? What is my purpose? But he says, the bottom line here is we have a growing comfort in this country with cruelty. The eternal struggle between good and evil has stepped out from behind the curtain and has taken center stage. Whether we wanted it or not, we have been written into this story where both light and darkness work through human hands, which means each one of us has a role to play. He concluded, and I love this, courage is a muscle. If you wait for a grand moment to use it, you will find it lacking. Thank you, Glenn. That was a great piece. Like I said, I'm very ready to quote and attribute the credit to those who can say something better than I, of which there are a lot of people. But a partner, so to speak, of his, David Kapelian with WorldNet Daily, went on to say here this past week that, and lamenting the virtual demise, or coming demise, as it's right on, we're on the cusp, of the Judeo-Christian culture. Now, there's a work going on in Gen Z, and I'm thrilled about that, because they're the ones who are going to have to pull this out of the bag. But will they? Are there enough of them? Are they just getting saved and giving their heart to the Lord before there's a civil war and they pass away, but at least the revival is great because they go on into eternity? Kapelian says, the United States of America, whatever its faults, is indeed the most welcoming and most Christian nation on the face of the earth. There are several reasons that we are collapsing, but the very big one has been the astonishingly rapid importation into this country of never-ending hordes of people holding values utterly opposed to everything America represents. I'm going to stop with a quote here for just a minute because I'm going to say, I have come to the point where I'm simply against all immigration. We got 350 million people. We've reached manifest destiny. We don't have to move westward, young man, westward ho, because there's a border to conquer. We don't have to take under control all the vast expanse. It's been done. We do not need more people. There's no any more than after Thanksgiving holiday, you need more company. But this reason, the astonishingly rapid importation of this country of never-ending hordes of people holding values utterly opposed to everything America represents. And he says, consider the Bible's first two commandments. Thou shalt have no other gods before me, for thou shalt not take unto thee any graven image, and thou shalt not bow down thyself to them nor serve them. So let's listen to what he is citing as going on in this country, not in small numbers, but huge numbers. Sugarland, Texas, the Sri Ashtalakshmi Temple, Ashtalakshmi Temple, recently erected, this is in Texas, the third tallest statue in the entire United States, an immense 90-foot statue of the Hindu god, Lord Hanuman. That's right, the third largest statue in the U.S. now. Is not just a statue representing Indians killed in some war. It's to a Hindu god. Don't go away. I'm just getting rolling. We'll be right back.
The Robin Walter Show is a listener-supported program. Your contribution goes to help as many people as possible to hear that the Word of God has answers to help you survive and even thrive in the dark days ahead in this country. We pledge to bring you the critical information you need to make informed decisions in this age where big tech and big media have conspired to rid our country of everything Christian. Please send your support to Red Sky Radio, P.O. Box 99, Wickenburg, Arizona, 85358. That's Red Sky Radio, P.O. Box 99, Wickenburg, Arizona, 85358. Thank you.
Well, we're back. This is the Robin Walter Show, part of the Red Sky Radio Network. All right, continuing what I was starting there before the break regarding this Hindu temple statue, the third largest statue in the United States, 90 foot tall, and it is to worship a pagan god. A pagan god in Texas. You see, this is what the left's plan was by letting in gazillions of people, most of whom don't want to move to North Dakota because they freeze their buns off. So they're going to stay close to the border and ultimately turn a big state like Texas blue. That's the whole plan. Easy. That's the easy to decipher what their plan was. And it's happening. We got, what, 445,000 Muslims now in Texas? I don't know how many gazillion mosques. And he goes on to cite there that there are now 1,176 Hindu temples in the United States. Polls reveal that fewer people who live in America self-identify as Christian. I've said this over and over again. It's a fact we all know intuitively. But I say that nature abhors a vacuum, and so does politics, so does religion, so does human nature. So human beings who are not following Christ, they're going to follow someone or something else. So you've got this Muslim planned community called Epic City, only 40 miles north of Dallas. Its construction is temporarily held up, but this planned Muslim city would include 1,000 homes, K-12 school, community college, sports facility, shopping center. They've already got their mosque there, the East Plano Islamic Center, which is where the word epic comes from, which is intended to be the nucleus of the epic city. So these citizens that are near this temple are having to put up with a lousy Muslim call to prayer and the Arabic music blaring over loudspeakers. Why can't you get a noise ordinance? Why do they cut these people slack? Go back to your sand in the Middle East and keep people awake there. But consider who's the head of this. The epic mosque leader, called the scholar in residence, Yasir Qadhi. He says he's going to reject any form of government that doesn't conform to Sharia law. And they'll have their own city. Qadhi's also on record as praising the Taliban, denying the Nazi Holocaust, calling democracy illegitimate, advocating for Sharia supremacy, raising money for terrorist groups, and referring to Christians as, quote, filthy polytheists whose lives hold no value. Do you see what we got going on here? When are we going to wake up? Then, of course, you got Dearborn, Michigan, which is the first Muslim-majority city in the United States. We got one. First one. It's now being called the Jihad Capital of the United States. Capellian writes here, shouts of death to America are frequently heard at their pro-Palestinian protests in Dearborn. And a video of an event hosted by the Palestinian Youth Movement showed participants pledging to sacrifice themselves to end the American empire. But, you know, back to Texas near Epic City, that's just down the road from the whack job Islamic psychiatrist Nidal Hassan, who we let into the military, stupid us, who then killed 13 soldiers in 2009. Remember that? Barack Obama, we got this mass slaughter at Fort Hood. And he's scheduled to do a press conference. He comes out and he starts giving shout outs. And he said, well, I also understand that we had a matter of workplace violence. That weenie of a president who is Muslim through and through couldn't come out and say it was an Islamic whack job attack. It was a terrorist attack. That's workplace violence. So how many killed? He killed 13. How about the whack job Shamsud Din Jabbar? The Texan inspired by the Islamic State drove the truck into a crowd in New Orleans. Remember that a few years ago? Killing 14, wounding 57. And, of course, we got the American public school system, which is now pushing in different cities, Satan clubs. How do we hold it together? We don't. We don't. And you got one party, the Democrats, who by way of poll have said that there's something more important than climate change, more important than our schools and education, something more important than gun violence, something more important than health care, something more important than inflation, something more important than the economy, something more important than taxes, something more important than immigration, something more important than abortion. And what is that? It's fighting Donald Trump. It's holding, as the writer says here, hanging on to Trump derangement syndrome. Now, the Atlanta Journal-Constitution did a poll very recently of Democrats in Georgia, asking them what their single most important issue is. Number one, standing up to Donald Trump and MAGA Republicans. That was 20%. It was higher than inflation, 17, the economy, 15, and jobs. And you go right on down the line. And you know what? They don't even mention keeping legal abortion. They don't even mention keeping legal gender mutilation and all the demonic things that they embrace. One writer said, the Democratic National Committee is convinced a certain demographic to put Trump derangement syndrome over prosperity. One said, gosh, in a new poll of Georgia, Democrats say that their single most important issue is standing up to Abraham Lincoln and against those anti-slavery Republicans. The satire couldn't be more biting and hitting here and truthful. Republicans were the party that were anti-slavery. Everybody listening to this program, understands the history of this United States, knows that it's the Democrats that are the supporters of slavery, and they still do. Because Democrats think blacks are so stupid that they can't go out and get a voter ID to vote. Now, the great majority of blacks, 76%, think voter ID should be required. The ones who contend it because they're whoring and pimping for black votes are the whites. Traditionally, and more recently, majority seeming to be white liberal women, the worst species on earth, that say, well, this is racist to require ID from anybody, particularly blacks and Mexicans. Well, what's racist? What could be more racist than to conclude that blacks aren't smart enough or don't have the guts or the time or whatever to go get a voter ID? When they should have one, it's a driver's license, right? Library card. Got to have something. So what does this bring us to? What I have laid out for you today is the case that I tend to think war in the United States is absolutely inevitable. I do. And will it occur before Trump's done? No, I don't think so. Will it occur after him? Maybe, pretty soon. The left isn't coming to the center. Why can't we just all get together, everybody says, have this big kumbaya party? The violence, I'm sick and tired of taking 20 minutes each week of sharing left-wing violence. It's a broken record. It's the same old, same old. And they are not getting weaker. They're not getting tamer. They're getting bolder and stronger. They're more vitriol, more virulent, more venomous. The degree to which they speak. I mean, what was it? Woody Harrelson the other day said, what was that? I'm not getting the quote exactly here, but something to the effect that, what's this? Maybe I got it. Oh, okay. I've got the sense of it. It's kind of coming to me here, though I don't have it in front of me. But he said he'd like to take out Trump. He said if he was a Secret Service agent, he would slip him some cyanide to kill him. That's what he'd do if he was a Secret Service agent. He would kill Trump. This is what has become mainstream Democrat discourse. It's okay to kill the people we don't agree with in politics. And, you know, what would be the case if we said that? Gosh, I really hope Gavin Newsom drinks some poison tonight and he bleeds out by 5 o'clock. Or, gosh, what would happen? Would it be fun to see somebody decapitate Gavin Newsom on TV? Would that be fun or not? Just a question. I'm asking, not suggesting. You know, I'd be arrested if it meant that, and I don't. But this is the way the left talks all the time. There's no coming together anymore. We are simply too far apart. The unavoidable reality of human history is that there is a time when there needs to be war. There has to be war. There had to be war. There had to be a civil war to end slavery. It wasn't going to end otherwise. Libby Emmons writes this, and I quote her. She said, the divisions are getting deeper. The chasms are cavernous. The gulf between the political right and left is so expansive that even echoes don't resonate. That's well said. It's a problem when the center is gone and no one even believes in the goodwill of their opponents. I remember distinctly a political climate where the right and the left both wanted the same things for the country, but disagreed on how to get there. But now I don't think the political right and left want the same things at all. I think they want the opposite. The left wants a welfare state, open immigration, and an end to Israel. The right wants individual freedom, closed borders, and to support Israel against terrorism. I think it's crazy that Israel is such a big issue for American politicians, for no other nation rises to the kind of obsession that Israel does. I'm not into a welfare state because total reliance on government means subservience to government. Open borders are an end to nationhood. One side wants America to thrive and remain American. The other side wants it to be an economic zone with excessive taxation and a class of bottom-feeding peasants. So I'll leave you with one more thought. The Zoran Mamdani Victory Party at that Mehdi Hassan, Jamal Bowman, and Hassan Piker all waxed poetic about the good old days of the Soviet Union. Matt Taibbi, I can never pronounce his name correctly, Taibbi, who spent time living and working in Russia, said, I could fill a whole book with stories of horrible things I heard and saw from eyewitnesses to Soviet history. And to see people laughing about this stuff, I can't even describe the emotions. And so Matt went on to describe how wealthy peasants there were killed by making it illegal to house them and letting them and their families die in the cold. The people you hear praising communism and communist or socialist nations do so because they think they would be the rulers, not the peasants. But under a welfare communist state like Mamdani is suggesting, and with open borders, which the Democrats all want, those are my words though, there's no such thing any longer as citizens. There's only a servant class. This is why war is unavoidable. God's not against war. People say, oh, God's against war. God is love. Then why did he say there's a time for war and there's a time for peace? Why did he say a gazillion times who needed to be wiped out of wicked tribes? Why does God say that because there ended up being war because the Hebrews' faith was polluted by intermarriages with people of different religions? Got that? Like Hindu, Islam, what have you? Satanism, all that's invading this country? That polluted the people. It contaminated their faith. Ultimately, they went into servitude, and it took war to bring them out of it. If God's against war, why does Jesus return with all the saints and the angels from heaven to absolutely wipe out a whole bunch of bad people on earth when he returns? Read the book of Revelation. It's war on steroids. The blood is up to the bridle of the horses in the Valley of Megiddo. Why? God's not against war. He's against unjust wars. Wars where you fight to gain and steal from another country, to take them in as slaves or so forth. Don Feder, who is a great historian, he talked about the Veterans Day the other day and about World War I, which was supposedly the war to end war, because 16 million people died, civilian and military, in what was called the Great War. Problem was, that was dwarfed by World War II, where 75 to 80 million people died. And then came Korea. Came Vietnam, the Six-Day War, the Afghanistan. You go right on down the line. You can't, the attempts, and this is my point, maybe, of the entire program, is that you cannot have attempts to make peace in the face of unspeakable evil, which will often lead to greater problems. You got Neville Chamberlain, who said, peace in our time, as he cut a peace agreement with Adolf Hitler. Feder goes on to say the plan for ceasefire in Gaza, it'll resolve nothing other than giving Hamas a breather. For when people have been saying they want to kill you since time immemorial, people who routinely torture hostages and whose religion calls for a holy war to wipe you off the face of the map, and that there will no longer be any Christians or Jews, you should believe them. You should believe them. The Cloward Piven strategy, which some people on this program, some of the listeners know well, part of that program, and I need to quote Don here because he knows it well and can say it better, the goal is to keep millions here illegally and drain our resources to support them. That is a Cloward Piven strategy. You bring down a capitalist system. You bring down a constitutional republic by bringing and fomenting problems through increasing demands on the government so great, through welfare, through subsidies, through people who won't work and get paid just to feed themselves and do nothing constructive. The demand is so great, the system breaks down. But back to his quote, the government shutdown is partly because of the Democrats' demand to fully fund health care for illegals. Left wants them to get them voting, and then to wait for the day when the border can be opened again and they will be joined by tens of millions more, then America will be unrecognizable. Actually, America will be done. Those are my words. He went on to say, United Nations is inveterately anti-Israel, the only democracy in the Middle East. But just last year, the General Assembly condemned Israel 17 times. And the entire rest of the world, collectively, 6 times. Almost 3 times more have they been condemned by the entire rest of the world. Didn't condemn Russia or the Ukraine or all these other places where the Christians are getting slaughtered in Nigeria and the Sudan. No, just pick on Israel. They're the most frequent target of aggression ever. But the fact of the matter is, this has gone on forever. The world has always hated the Jews. They always will, right to the end. Remember, Jesus returns to the Mount of Olives. Jesus returns to Israel. He's coming back to Jerusalem. He's not returning to Baltimore, folks. Not coming back to Chi-Town. Nope. He's coming back to Israel. And when he returns, there will be the war of all wars. But in the meantime, honestly, I don't think we can avoid it. I think war is unavoidable. And actually, war may be simply necessary. You couldn't clean up the situation in 1857, which led to the breakout in 1860. I say 1857 because that was the year of the Dred Scott decision, which said that basically blacks weren't humans. Horrible, worst decision. Actually, it's a precedent for abortion. Children in the womb aren't really human, so they have no rights. They didn't mention that in the Roe v. Wade thing or decision, but that's the fact. We are so far apart, the divide is so great, that can you name me one thing that would bring them back, bring us together? I know everybody's going to say revival, but revival pops up in here and there and does a work in small places. I only know of one time where revival changed a nation. It was actually a city-state, and that was Nineveh. And in the process of time, Nineveh went back to its old ways and got destroyed. Revivals save individuals. I can't think of a time when a revival saved a nation in this much trouble. Revival can save a nation that's under duress and oppression and attack, because that will drive the people to prayer, drive the people to their knees, drive the people to God, whether it was a Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor, whether it was World War I, but within a nation, inside of a nation, that one side goes left, one side goes right. One loves darkness, one loves light. One upholds and supports righteousness. The others give the middle finger of diplomacy to the word of God, curse God, want everybody who thinks like somebody that they despise, i.e. case Donald Trump, or frankly any Christian, they want them dead. They want them gone, and they are very open about it. I'm sorry. I wish I had good news about this. War is not only inevitable. I am coming to the point that war is probably necessary. Now, am I calling for a rise to arms? No. No, I'm not calling to get up and attack anybody. That's down the road. Not that I'd be calling for the attack, but it's a matter of self. The war will be an action of self-defense by the righteous against the attacks by the wicked. More people on the left are buying guns. Maybe they fear ICE. Who knows? I don't know what it is. Maybe they're getting prepared too, because they can see the handwriting on the wall. The Civil War was known to be a certainty for a number of years before it actually broke out, and it no longer could be denied when the Confederates fired on Fort Sumter. Then it was party over. Game began. And there were hundreds of thousands that died. And ultimately, it was necessary that blood be shed for the sin to be cleansed. What horror does that sound familiar? Our sins cleansed only by the blood that was shed by Jesus. The one who was innocent had to die for the guilty to be redeemed. So when this happens, I don't know if it's in my lifetime, I am doing certain things in preparation of that, just to be ready for what will start as a complete breakdown of civil order. How it happens, what will be the spark, what will be the shot fired on Fort Sumter, I don't know. But the left isn't repenting. The left is just becoming increasingly wicked, with a Democrat Party that seems to not have the cojones to stand up to bad ideas Sharia law in New York City, which a bunch of people are chanting for. You might do well to read the Quran. I've read it. The passage where it calls for killing the Jews and the Christians, for eliminating Israel from the face of the earth. If Jews weren't the chosen people and Israel wasn't the chosen land, why would all the Muslims that are of that ilk want to drive them into the Mediterranean Sea? They're not driving them into Lake Michigan from Chicago. No, not happening there. Not yet. Be in prayer. Ask God what He would have you to do. You have two important things to do. I don't care if you're a preacher or not. Preach the Word of God and love people. Preach the Word of God and love people. To your family, to your friends, to your enemies. Preach the Word of God. Be instant in season and out of season. Love them, but you speak the truth, as hard as it may be. It could be someday they're on the other side of the Civil War. But you've done your job. God bless you. See you next week.